Hello and welcome to the Pharmacotherapy Podcast. My name is Tom Lodis. I'm a professor at the Albany College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences and a clinical pharmacy specialist at the Stratton VA Medical Center in Albany, New York. I am also one of the scientific editors for Pharmacotherapy. Today, we are talking with Drs. Andrew Fratoni and Dr. Joseph Cuddy about a paper they co-authored with David Nicolaud entitled A Guide to Therapeutic Drug Monitoring of Beta-Lactams, published in the February 2021 issue of Pharmacotherapy. Andrew is the Infectious Diseases Pharmacotherapy Fellow at Hartford Hospital in Hartford, Connecticut, and Dr. Cuddy is the Associate Director of Clinical and Economic Studies at Hartford Hospital. Andrew and Joe, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having us, Tom. Appreciate it.
So first of all, thank you very much for writing this paper. As I told Joe, this is something that I'll be providing to all my students moving forward. Extremely well done. So thank you for publishing this. First question for you is, Joe.
Yeah, go ahead.
And Andrew, is why? You know, beta-lactams have wide therapeutic safety windows. We have pushed for all this prolonged extended infusion. Why now, or what is the motivation for doing beta-lactam TDM? Why is this so important to do in addition to all the things we have implemented in recent years?
Well, I'll start that answer by saying that this topic is a passion of ours at Hartford. I can still remember 20 years ago, the very first patient that I did TDM on, non-vancomycin, non-aminoglycoside patient, that is, and it was a CF patient who was pretty ill with Burkholderia sepatia that was resistant to everything, happened to be the very first patient that we ever administered high-dose prolonged infusion meropenem in. And, you know, there was a lot of hesitancy by clinicians to go that high. What is this prolonged infusion thing? Remember, we're talking 20 years ago now. And at the end of the day, we were able to demonstrate very, very nicely that with the concentration profile and the TDM, that was the right dose for that patient, and he ended up doing well. So it's a passion of ours. We've done it for 20 years here at Hartford, so it's kind of a bit second nature. But we're often asked by others all the time to help with TDM on their patients. They send samples to us and so forth. So although I want to continue to help others with that, we thought this was a perfect time to put out this quote unquote guide, a little bit of our opinion on how we might do this. So to answer your question directly from a scientific perspective on why, well, we think it has a lot to do with the fact that this is the most popular and widely used class of antibiotics in the hospital setting. I mean, it's used from in very sick patients all the way to not so sick patients, in the ICU, in pediatrics, outside of the ICU, large patients, small patients, every single gradient of renal dysfunction that you can imagine. And then when you start adding in all of the mechanical modalities that we do to these patients, you can imagine that exposure is really not that predictable. It's all over the place for these patients, yet they often get a fixed dose based solely on a Cockcroft-Gault estimated GFR, which isn't that great to begin with as well. So I think a lot of it has to do with just fine-tuning what exposure is in these patients, and then understanding that the MIC range for beta-lactams is many, many, many dilutions. We're not talking the vancomycin here, with most of the MICs are one, and maybe a few at two. We're talking very exquisitely susceptible all the way to extremely resistant. So there's a plenty of opportunity to even dose escalate given their safety. I completely agree with you that high dose prolonged infusion is what we should be doing in our sickest of patients in the majority of our patients as kind of our standard. But that still doesn't detract from the fact that we may need to even go higher than that in certain patients.
Interesting. So, Joe, I guess the question is, you mean you identified, you know, one of the primary reasons is situations where there's a lot of interpatient variability in exposure. And, you know, and also if you have perhaps a wider distribution in your expected MIC values. So are there certain beta-lactams? Is this something more for our, you know, beta-lactams target against non-lactose fermenters? Or do you think this applies to, you know, anything from a carbapenem even to maybe cefazolin?
Yeah, I think it could be applied to any beta-lactam against any organism as a class, you know, but I think that not every drug requires beta-lactam TDM. Not every patient requires beta-lactam TDM. And I imagine you'll ask that question a little bit later. But clearly, we think about the sickest patients who are receiving, you know, the big guns. And the last thing we want to do is underexpose them. So non-fermenting gram negatives is high on the list there of target pathogens. They tend to have higher MICs. But even organisms in the Enterobacter alis order that have carbapenemases, certainly possible to up the dose and get the exposures needed there as well. I think with the newer drugs that we now have available to us, I would personally probably use a ceftazidime avibactam or a meropenem vaborbactam instead of upping my meropenem dose to treat a KPC. I think that the inhibitor will help tremendously with that, more so than what we could ever do with TDM. But the fact is there's plenty of organisms in there that I think this can be applied to. And you mentioned cefazolin. Cefazolin, which is an extremely highly protein-bound drug, actually has a lot of PK variability as well. We just aren't used to understanding it because it's such an older drug. We don't have MICs that are often done for it. But I think there's a lack of understanding that we probably are underdosing some of our cefazolin as well in our patients and not even realizing it. So there may be an opportunity for drugs even like that one.
So interesting. So you kind of, when you think about the characteristics of the beta-lactams, it seems that potentially all of them, so it's more of a matter of the population. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, I think of the population and the organisms as the higher priority, and then the drug after that.
So Andrew, I would ask you, what populations do you think, or who do you think would benefit most from TDM? You know, where do you think it has, as a practicing clinician, you know, where do you think it has its greatest value?
Sure. So I think Joe already alluded to this previously. But essentially, the patients who might benefit the most from TDM of beta-lactams are those who essentially have markedly altered pharmacokinetics, as well as the potential to have organisms with MICs that are at or near the breakpoints. So specifically, what we go into in this paper are populations such as cystic fibrosis that Joe alluded to with that patient case from back about 20 years ago. So these patients do have certain pharmacokinetic changes, be it due to more lean body mass or higher clearance of drugs, as well as they tend to harbor more resistant gram-negative organisms, especially these non-fermenters, just because of their repeated exposures to broad-spectrum antibiotics. But other subpopulations to consider certainly are those who are on organ support techniques, such as ECMO, or different renal replacement therapies, be it intermittent hemodialysis or CRRT. And even within CRRT, we know that there are different doses and settings for these support systems. So Mrs. Jones certainly may not have the same CRRT settings as Mrs. Smith, and it makes it very difficult to kind of predict what their concentrations are and what the clearance is. Especially when you start to think about and factor in, do they have any residual renal function on top of these support techniques? So this patient population overall is very difficult to predict concentrations. And then another population to look at in critical illness is augmented renal clearance. So this is defined as a creatinine clearance greater than or equal to 130 milliliters per minute. We tend to see this more in younger patients who have experienced trauma or sepsis. And basically, the underlying pathophys is we're getting increased cardiac output, and this leads to increased perfusion to the kidneys. And as we well know, beta-lactams tend to be excreted by the kidneys. So we're getting increased drug clearance in this patient population. And also these patients in the ICU who have ARC likely are having changes in their volume of distribution due to fluid shifts and fluid resuscitation, as well as they may be experiencing hypoalbuminemia, which is allowing more free drug, more clearance, and more distribution throughout the body. So these are the ones that we really key in on in this paper, in this review. But there are others as well that certainly merit consideration for doing beta-lactam TDM in populations such as pediatrics, patients who are morbidly obese because of large body habitus, and then as well in certain infections where we worry about drug penetration to the site of infection, such as the CNS, where we worry or we wonder, you know, are the meninges inflamed or the ventricles inflamed enough to get enough drug to the active site of infection? TDM can kind of be an extra insurance to make sure we're reaching these therapeutic exposures in these patients who are very sick.
All right, excellent. So I think a question that always comes up is, I mean, I think Andrew did a very nice job identifying some of the potential target populations. And it sounds like anytime there's uncertainty whether or not you're achieving some of our critical PK/PD exposures for beta-lactams, an argument can be made to do beta-lactam TDM. So my question for you is, and since you have a lot of experience with beta-lactam TDM, is what are some of the major considerations, you know, barriers, you know, how do you handle the MIC in this process? Are you doing any sophisticated software, or are you just looking at the perhaps the beta-lactam concentration in the middle of the dosing interval and using that as a surrogate? So I think what would really benefit our listeners here is, you know, what are some of the things that they should consider if they intend to operationalize beta-lactam TDM in one of their patients?
Yeah, those are the questions that we most often get asked, and you know, the how to do it type of how to implement it. And I think the greatest barrier to beta-lactam TDM right now is the fact that there is a lack of clinically available assays in one's chemistry lab. You can't order a meropenem level like you can a vancomycin level. But there are labs out there that do them. We are one of them. There are many other labs that can turn these things around very quickly. And I think we wanted to point out in this paper that it is possible. You can do this, and you can collect some blood samples, and you can send them out and get your levels the next day so you can make some decisions. We just did two sulfinirocol patients 2 weeks ago who were both on CRRT, one with a multi-drug resistant Pseudomonas, one with a steno, very different effluent rates, as Andrew had mentioned. And the TDM was very helpful in helping us to optimize the dosing regimen for those patients. So I think that's the major barrier. And we wanted to make folks who are reading the paper aware that you can still do it. There are labs out there that can help you. The next part is how to get it done. We kind of go a little crazy here, and we lean more towards the full PK profile. So we like 3 to 4 samples so that we can very nicely characterize the pharmacokinetics of the patients here. But I don't think that that's required in every single patient. And what we tried to outline in the paper is really our preference for about 3 levels and when they should be collected, but that there are some other opportunities, such as what you're saying. If you want to use 50% time above the MIC as your target, get a level that's halfway during the through the dosing interval, and if you're above it, then you've got 50%. If you're not, you're below it. The difficulty with that single level, if you aren't using Bayesian software, and even if you are to an extent, is that you don't have a tremendous amount of information on what the patient's pharmacokinetics really is to help you adjust the dose if you're not there. So we always like multiple levels. We prefer that, but we also appreciate that may not be feasible for everyone. So we outline a couple of other alternative sampling strategies. Lastly, I think people probably forget and have an underappreciation about the stability of these drugs at room temperature. When in plasma, they're not all that stable. Carbapenems raised to the top of the list of awareness, but all of the beta-lactams have some instability. And therefore, it's important for the pharmacists who are going to be doing this to understand that they need to collect the samples, they need to process them quickly and get them into a freezer before they're shipping them out somewhere. So that's something that often we see forgotten, especially by clinical sites that are sending us samples and they let them thaw out on the counter too long. And then we get the results and they look extremely low. And you wonder if there was a stability issue going on in there as well. So we point out a couple of things in the paper for people to be aware of when they're considering this for their patients.
All right. Thank you, Joe and Andrew. So I would say this, I appreciate Joe and Andrew, you taking time today to discuss a little bit about your paper. Clearly, there's so many excellent level of detail in it that we can spend, you know, multiple hours discussing, you know, all the important considerations with operationalizing TDM. So I will encourage the listeners, if you have not read this paper yet, I would encourage you to read it, especially if you're considering doing TDM in your patients. Joe and Andrew, thank you for your time. Thank you for writing this valuable piece, The Pharmacotherapy. And please have a good day.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks for having us, Tom.